much pleasure in calling upon Brother Roger Lewis to lead us in our first study, Embarking on Life as Heirs Together.
Well, thank you, Brother Chairman, my dear brothers and sisters in the Lord Jesus Christ, and my dear young people. Well, we've got a very interesting study ahead of us, God willing, over the course of our next week together. We're going to consider, of course, the life of Abraham and Sarah as they appear to us in the divine record of the book of Genesis, and also as other particularly New Testament passages are taken up to expound the story of the life of this couple. Our first study this afternoon is really going to lay the foundation for what we believe follows in the divine record. And what we hope to do this afternoon is to, just as it were, open up the basis of this story so that in our opening, or in our second session rather this evening, we can then begin the story of the book of Genesis itself in more detail. We're not going to look at any particular exposition this afternoon. We're simply going to lay what we believe are the foundations of this particular story. You know, brothers and sisters, I think it would be fair to say that most of us, as Christadelphians, believe we know something about the book of Genesis. And in particular, if we were to be asked about Genesis chapter 12 to, let's say Genesis 22 or maybe chapter 25, we would say, yes, we know something about those chapters as Christadelphians. We know all about the book of Genesis. And in fact, I suppose that if you were asked, or if I were asked, well, what are those chapters all about? Well, what would you say? You know, I think most of us would say, well, they're all about the promises to Abraham. Now, that's what most of us would say, isn't it? And if we were asked more, well, what were the promises to Abraham all about? Well, I suppose we would say, well, the promise to Abraham was all about the inheritance of the land of Palestine forever. An eternal inheritance in the land of promise. Do you know that's not what those chapters are about? Genesis chapter 12 to Genesis chapter 25 is not just the story of Abraham and the promise of some land. When we read those chapters carefully, we can't help but be impressed with the fact that this is the story of two people. And two people that are inseparably bound together in the record. And the promise of these chapters is not so much the promise of land, but the promise of the seed that was to be given to this couple. These chapters in the book of Genesis are all about the life of Abraham and the life of Sarah, his wife. And I'm sure that by the time we've finished our consideration of these chapters together, you'll see now, in fact, what you'll say is, well, why haven't we seen that before? It's so obvious, but you see, we've all grown up in Sunday school and we've all done our Sunday school lessons, and we believe that these chapters are about the promises to Abraham. It's actually the story of a marriage, these chapters. And probably the most well-documented marriage in the whole of the biblical record, the story of Abraham and Sarah, heirs together of the grace of life, to complete, of course, the passage from the 1st of Peter chapter 3, from whence our title is taken. You know that what we have in this story is the most intimately revealing diary of any marriage in Scripture. Here we have the moments of personal weakness in this couple's life. Their times of failure. Here we've got all the story of the pressures that were to be found within the marriage of this couple. Their moments of fear. Their feelings of emotion. Their times of anxiety in life. Moments when they experienced great exaltation of spirit. And other times when they felt the depths of dark despair hang heavy upon them. This is a marriage diary, these chapters in the book of Genesis. It's the story of the deepest feelings of these two about one another. How they really felt about each other in the depths of their heart. There isn't a diary on a person's marriage any more intimate than this one in the whole of the Bible record. You'll never ever read a story about marriage again that has more detail than this story in the book of Genesis concerning Abraham and Sarah. It's not only the most intimately revealing diary, but it's the most extensively documented account of a marriage that we have anywhere in Scripture. We open the pages of this diary and we have chapter after chapter after chapter on their life history, episode after episode taken out of their life in order that we can look at the story of their marriage and of the pressures that took place in their marriage. There's no other Bible record that compares with this one. Not for detail. And not only is it the most extensively documented marriage in Scripture, but it's the most extensively quoted marriage in Scripture. More than any other biblical marriage, we have other scriptural references to this couple occurring time and time again in the New Testament. How many times do you think Abraham's mentioned in the New Testament? Anyone like to have a guess? Just approximately. You want to know how many times Abraham's mentioned in the New Testament? What would you think? 10 times? 20 times? 50 times? You want to have a guess? The name Abraham in the New Testament. Yes, very good, Steve. 70. About 70 times. But if you were to take those 70 times and actually look at the major episodes in the New Testament where the life of Abraham occurs, because many of those quotations occur, and perhaps in one particular New Testament passage where the life of Abraham is being spoken about, you'll find, well, look, I've found anyway, you might find that the numbers are slightly different, but I've found that there were 9 major New Testaments to Abraham, New Testament references to Abraham. 9 major references in the New Testament to Abraham, and in 6 of those, Sarah stands alongside him. But we're going to look at all of those later on, and God willing, in our last study, we're going to take our time to those New Testament passages, and we're going to look at them in detail all together to see how the New Testament takes up the record of this couple. And on most occasions that Abraham is to be found in the New Testament record, we'll find his wife standing right alongside him. That's unique, you know. Now you stop and think about this. Alright, so what other Old Testament marriages can we think of? Well, I suppose the other obvious ones would be the patriarchs. So Isaac and Rebecca. How many times are Isaac and Rebecca quoted in the New Testament? What about Jacob and Leah? Where's Joseph and Asenath referred to in the New Testament record? What about Moses and Zipporah? Boaz and Ruth? Elkanah and Hannah? David and Bathsheba? Solomon and Pharaoh's daughter? Hezekiah and Hephzibah? Hosea and... Oh, there's a lot of Bible marriages, you know, when you think about it, in the Old Testament record. Where are they all in the New Testament? They're virtually never to be heard of. But this couple occur time and time and time again in the New Testament record. There's something special about this couple. Now we want to stress in our opening remarks that although we're going to talk about the life story of this particular couple and the circumstances of their marriage as the divine record sets it forth, that the principles that we're going to see coming out of their marriage and out of their life story are principles that are applicable and appropriate to everybody in life. It's true that as we look around the hall today that there might be some that aren't married. Not only some that aren't married, but there could be some here that are never going to be married, for whatever reason that might be. Wouldn't want you to think as we start this story today that if you're not married, that therefore this doesn't apply to you. Oh, yes it does. Because the principles that we're going to see in the life of this couple are principles that are universal for those who wish to live in the truth. The lessons that are going to come out of the story of Abraham and Sarah are principles, godly principles, that we all must live by irrespective of our marriage state in the truth. It doesn't matter. Don't think because you're not married that these studies will have no application to you. They will. There are lots of things that we find in the story of this couple that all of us need to learn and to develop in life that we might apply properly. But we are in the presence, nevertheless, of a very, very special couple. We might in fact say that they were outstanding individuals. Look, just a brief resume then of some of the quality of this particular couple, just to see how special they were in the divine record. Take a look at Abraham. You know, we're told in the 14th chapter of Genesis that here was a man who was sought after for his faithful valour. Remember the story of Genesis 14 and verses 14 and 15 when he was asked to go and rescue Lot, his nephew. Now, Abraham was not a man of raw courage. He was by nature a man who in fact could be very shy and very fearful. He wasn't naturally brave. And yet he was a man, nevertheless, that was sought for his faithful valour in respect of showing faith in God and going forth against the combined forces of Kedar Laomer in the 14th chapter of Genesis. A remarkable person. It was faith that caused him to do that, not native courage. And in the same chapter, a little later on, in chapter 14 and verses 22 to 23, remember when he came back and we had the episode of his discussion with the king of Sodom. Here was a man that would not associate with those of the world. He was a man, Abraham, who was noted for his integrity of purpose. He had marvellous strength of character, did this man. He was an upright man, was Abraham. A good man, from that point of view. He had integrity. And he was a warm man. We're told in chapter 18, as we're going to see a little later on, in chapter 18, verses 3 to 5, that when strangers came into his camp, that he manifested the spirit of hospitality in a very loving and in a very warm way. He was a man of feelings, a man of warmth, a pleasant person to talk to and to deal with. And yet, for all of that, we're going to find that this same man who was known for his faithful valour, a man that was known for his integrity of purpose, a man who was known for his warmth of hospitality, is the same man in chapter 12, verses 18 to 19, who later is going to be admonished for his use of deceit. A man that deceived other people. Abraham. Something we would never expect of him. And later on, in the 21st chapter, we're going to find that in the record there, he's corrected for his fleshly thinking in the matter of the separation of Ishmael from his household. He's really struggled with that. He didn't find that easy. And God himself eventually had to intervene in the record and to correct Abraham on a matter where he was not reasoning scripturally or spiritually. So you see, here is a man who has wonderful strengths, but he also had some weaknesses. He wasn't perfect. And what about his wife? Well, she's much the same. She was a special woman in many different ways, was Sarah, his wife. We're told in the 12th chapter concerning her that she was greatly admired for her exceptional beauty. Genesis chapter 12 and verses 14 and 15. And you know, I believe that the beauty of Sarah was exceptional, not only externally, but also inwardly. She was a woman that was noted for exceptional beauty. But as one reads the record, one is impressed with the fact that it wasn't just her looks, it must have been her character. There was something unusual about Sarah that made her particularly attractive. She had a lovely character, whatever looks she may have had. And maybe she had both, I'm sure she did. She was a woman who was known later in the record for her genuine submissiveness to her husband, as we're going to see in our second study this evening. We're told in the 18th chapter and in the 12th verse that she's commended because of the spirit of submissiveness that she was able to show to her husband on a later occasion. In the 21st chapter, at the very time when her own husband is struggling to think spiritually, she shows tremendous spiritual insight and perception when Abraham didn't. She saw it. She had a quickness of mind in spiritual things, did Sarah. She wasn't behind Abraham. And yet this same woman in the 18th chapter in verses 12 and 15 is going to be rebuked on another occasion for her incredulity in the matter of divine promise. Incredulity, unbelief, disbelief, lack of faith. Sarah was going to fall in that particular matter. And in chapter 16 we're going to find our exhortation tomorrow morning that she is exposed on another occasion, unfortunately, for her extremity of passion. Oh, she was a warm-hearted woman, this one. And there were times when Sarah could spit sparks. And she does. Now, do you know what that really tells us? What it really tells us is that this couple had both strengths and weaknesses. And the divine record is unmerciful in exposing both those sides of their character. The record doesn't paint a lovely story that only shows how wonderful this couple were. It also shows where they failed and where they went wrong and the weaknesses in their character. Almost as if to emphasize that when they do finally come to the fullness of faith, as they do in the story, it was because of God's influence in their lives that they finally became what they were. And they were changed by the truth and by their experiences in life. You know, I think one of the things that we want to get out of this study is that by the time we finish, we really want to feel that this couple are real people. You know, we all have a problem at times with imagining that Bible people are real people. Do you know what I mean? We talk about Hezekiah and Isaiah and Elijah and Paul as if somehow, well, they're sort of over there and we're over here, and they're sort of giants of the Bible story, but they're not real people, they're cardboard figures. These were real people, brothers and sisters. And by the time we've finished these studies, I'm sure that we'll feel drawn to Abraham and Sarah as being real people. They had good points and bad points. They had strengths and they had weaknesses. They had times when they struggled to overcome their own difficulties in life. It's important that we come to understand that, to see them in that way. It's the way the Bible presents them. You know, come and have a look at chapter 11, which is what we did have taken as a reading together. You notice how the divine record brings them together in the opening part of this story. In Genesis chapter 11, we have the introduction, of course, of Abraham and Sarah in the record together. Notice how they're introduced. Genesis chapter 11, perhaps reading from we'll read from verse 27. Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran, and Haran begat Lot, and Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity in Ur of the Chaldees. And Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren. She had no child. And Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran his son's son, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan. Do you know that what that tells us is that the very first time that Abraham appears before us in the divine record, his wife is there with him. You notice that? The very first time that Abraham ever appears before us in the divine record, there's his wife alongside him. Verse 29, the name of Abram's wife. Verse 31, his son, Abram's wife. There she is, right from the very start of this story,
They are brought into the record together as man and wife. But it's not a very good marriage in some ways, is it? Because this is really an idolatrous union in Ur of the Chaldees. It's not a marriage founded upon faithfulness in divine principles. This is a marriage of pagans. And not only is it a pagan marriage, but it's a fruitless one as well, because verse 30 tells us that Sarai was barren. She had no child. The word barren means to be sterile. So it's an idolatrous union. It's based on the principles of the flesh, and there's no fruit to the union whatsoever. But they are there as man and wife from the beginning of that story. Now, what chapter does Abraham die in? You want to tell me? Oh, we all know the book of Genesis. What chapter does Abraham die in? Genesis chapter 25? I'll accept that. It is chapter 20. Let's go and have a look at Genesis 25, because now we're at the other... You see, Genesis 11 is when they first come into the divine record. But Genesis 25 is the curtain now being closed upon them, of course, at the end of the story. Well, here's the end of the story, Genesis chapter 25, reading from verse 8. Then Abraham gave up the ghost and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people. And his sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, which is before Mamre, the field which Abraham purchased of the sons of Heth. There was Abraham buried, and Sarah, his wife. So you see how the divine record closes now about the story of Abraham. The record opens with his wife alongside of him, Genesis chapter 11. When Abraham dies, he's buried in the cave of Machpelah alongside his wife, says Genesis chapter 25, verse 10. But this isn't the same marriage anymore, is it, really? Not this couple that are buried together in Genesis 25. This is now a couple whose marriage has been firmly founded upon the principles of faith. And it's not barren anymore. You notice that, verse 9? And his sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave. So now there's fruit to the union. They've brought forth a family, this couple now. And they're quite a different couple to the ones that first come on the record in Genesis chapter 11. There's been a lot of change and development in the record. And between these two moments of time, Genesis chapter 11 and Genesis chapter 25, we have the whole story of this couple. Now just look how they walk through the divine record here of the book of Genesis, hand in hand, as it were. So in Genesis chapter 11, they enter the record of Scripture together. Now that's significant. How many other men, faithful men in the record, as soon as they turn up in the Bible record, do we see their wife mentioned alongside? That's unusual. Because in the story of this man, his wife is going to stand alongside him in everything. And so she is. Now just look at this. Genesis chapter 12. They embark upon the journey of faith together in the opening verses of that chapter. We're specifically told that they come together into the land. The balance of the verse, which is going to be our second study this evening, they endure trouble and testing together as they go down into the land of Egypt, and Abraham makes a bad, bad mistake. Something he should never have done. And Genesis chapter 12 is going to show Abraham in a bad light where he lets his wife down. Not good. In Genesis chapter 15 and 16, we're going to learn of the time when they endure the distress of barrenness together. We're going to find in that chapter, in Genesis chapter 16, that this time it's Sarah that makes a mistake. Sarah that promotes an idea. Sarah that pushes something along that really wasn't the right way to try and solve a problem that they had. And it's Sarah who makes the mistake in Genesis chapter 16. In Genesis 17, we're told of that time when they embraced the covenant blessing together. Remember the story of the promise of the son and of the seed, and why, both their names are changed, aren't they, in that chapter. Remember, not just Abraham's, but Sarah's as well. They're in this matter together, is the story of Genesis chapter 17. In Genesis chapter 18, we're told that they entertain three angelic visitors together. When we come to that story, you'll find that that's so. They do it together. It's a combined effort between the husband and the wife when those visitors arrive in Genesis chapter 18. In Genesis chapter 20, they go, of course, into the land of the Philistines and into the house of Abimelech. And funnily enough, it's in the very crisis of that moment in the land of the Philistines that they finally come to the triumph of faith. And when they do, both come to that moment of triumph concerning their faithfulness in the divine promise. When they do, they come to it together. At the same time, they meet each other in their belief of God. In Genesis chapter 21, we have the story of them enjoying the sun of their love together. And finally, as we have read it here in Genesis chapter 25, they are enfolded in death together. Why have I used the word enfold, by the way? Enfolded in death together. Now, why have I used the word enfold? Because that's the meaning of Machpelah, isn't it? Folded together. They were in a cave, which means folded together. That's the end of the story. Two people who loved each other, who lived with each other, who learnt with each other, finally buried together in a cave that means folded together. And where was the cave? Why, in Hebron. And Hebron means fellowship. Oh, this is a story of a couple. Don't ever think, brothers and sisters, that these chapters are about the promises to Abraham. Because that's just not right. It's the life story of a couple. And in the outworking of this story, we're going to be given many a great and wonderful incident that we can profit from with respect to the story, not only of married life together, but of so many principles in life, in successful life, in the truth that we must learn to apply in order that we might be fruitful before our God. So that's what these chapters are really all about. It's the story of two people, heirs together of the grace of life. These chapters in Genesis are not about the promise of land, but about the promise of a seed to these two particular people. You know, it's a funny thing when you actually look at the divine record of these chapters. We just come through them, just come through those same chapters again. Now, you can see down the right-hand side there, we've got the story of the chapters of Genesis, and here we have a line representing the age, the respective ages of Abraham and Sarah. Can anyone tell me how much older was Abraham than Sarah? Anyone know? What was their age difference? Anybody know? Well, we can work it out, actually. If you come back to Genesis chapter 17. Yes, 10 years was quite right. Now, prove it. Prove it to me. Yes, that's pretty good. That's right. So Genesis chapter 17 and verse 17 is probably the simplest way of proving that, isn't it? Abraham fell upon his face and laughed and said, "Shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old, and shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear?" So there's a 10-year gap between these two. So you notice that the line of Abraham starts a little bit before the line of Sarah, because he was 10 years older. He lived quite a bit longer too, didn't he, at the bottom end of the line. How old was Sarah when she died? Can anyone remember? You know how old Sarah was when she died? She was 127, says the divine record. Now, does anyone know how old Abraham was when he died? 175. So not only was he 10 years older, born 10 years before Sarah, but he lived quite a lot longer after the death of Sarah. She died at 127. He didn't die till 175. So he was there for quite a few years after the death of his wife. Now, we've got a lot of chapters down the right-hand side about this couple. Let's have a look again. So chapter 12, they come into the land, they experience famine, they go down into the land of Egypt, and they experience trouble together. Chapter 13 is the story, remember, of the separation of Lot from the household of Abraham. The renewal of the promise. The family now moves to Hebron. Chapter 14, the battle of the kings. The meeting with Melchizedek. The meeting with the king of Sodom. Chapter 15, the promise of a son and the making of the covenant. Unto thy seed have I given this land from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates. Chapter 16, the story of Hagar coming into the story and of Ishmael. Chapter 17, the final covenant now that's brought forth whereby the son is promised and their names are changed. Chapter 18, three angelic visitors arrive into the encampment of Abraham and are entertained by Abraham and his wife. And they also speak, remember, with the patriarch about the impending judgment that now is going to come down upon Sodom. And that's really what chapter 19 is about, isn't it? The destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah and the rescue of Lot out of the Holocaust. Chapter 20 is the story of Abraham and Sarah in the land of the Philistines. Chapter 21 is the story of the birth of Isaac and the casting out of Ishmael from the Abrahamic household. Well, we could have gone perhaps one or two chapters further on, couldn't we? But I've left it at that point because really, as far as the story of Abraham and Sarah is concerned, chapter 21 is really the last incident where they appear together as husband and wife in the divine record. We know that in chapter 22, of course, is the story of the sacrifice of Isaac, but that's more the story of Isaac and his father. Chapter 23 is the death of Sarah. Chapter 24 is the marriage of Isaac. Chapter 25 is the death of Abraham. And there truly the curtain closes. Now I want to show you something interesting about those chapters. Just have a look at this. Now, down the other side of the screen, we have those same chapters of the book of Genesis now, tied in with the respective ages of Abraham down through time. Now you'll notice here that the 12th chapter of the book of Genesis is set in the 75th year of the life of Abraham. And as you quite rightly said, we're told that, aren't we? If we come back to Genesis chapter 12 for a moment, we're told that, aren't we, in verse 4. In Genesis chapter 12 and verse 4, we're told that Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. So in this 12th chapter, when he comes into the land of promise, he's 75. But when we come to chapter 16, and to the very last verse of chapter 16, we're told in chapter 16 and verse 16, and Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bare Ishmael to Abraham. So how old was he at the end of chapter 16? He's now, how old is he? He's now 86. So therefore, if we know that he's 86 at the end of chapter 16, then everything that happened in chapter 13 and 14 and 15 must have happened between the years 75 and 86, mustn't they? Everyone follow me on that? So if we know that chapter 12 is set at the time when he's 75, and by the time he comes to chapter 16 he's only 86, then all the other three chapters must have occurred in the intervening 10 years. But you'll notice that in chapter 17, in verse 1 it says, and when Abram was 90 years old and 9. So chapter 17 now jumps another 13 years to when he's 99. And how old is he when Isaac is born in chapter 21? We know that we're told in Genesis 21 and verse 5, and Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. So if we know that Abraham was 100 years old in chapter 21, but 99 years old in chapter 17, verse 1, then chapter 18, 19, 20, and 21 must have all happened in 1 year. And it was even more than that, because you see, Genesis chapter 17 gave them a promise when he was 99 that they would have a child 12 months later. But when it says in chapter 21, well, look what it says in chapter 21. Chapter 21 and verse 1 says, "And Yahweh visited Sarah as he had said and did, as he had spoken, for Sarah conceived and bare Abram a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him." So the promise of the child was that he would come forth in 12 months' time, but he wasn't conceived until the start of Genesis chapter 21. So most of the intervening chapters, in fact, occurred in a space of probably only 3 or 4 months. Chapter 18, 19, and 20. Now, you stop and think about this. So how old was Abraham in total? He was 175 when he died. You know what that's really telling us, that little chart? It tells us that how much are we told about the first 75 years of Abram's life? Virtually nothing. What do we know about the last 75 years of Abram's life? Virtually nothing. The divine record focuses on only 25 years of the patriarch's life in the middle of his life. And all that story in the book of Genesis is really the story just of those 25 years. 25 out of 175. That tells us that the record has chosen events that must have been very significant. That the chapters that we do have and the episodes that we do have and the stories that we have been given are charged with importance. They are obviously highly representative of what went on in Abram's life. They are typical of the story of their marriage and of their character development as a whole. So the Spirit selects 25 years. It says, now you look at those years, because that's the story of that man. Didn't need any more. What the Spirit selected and put into the book of Genesis was sufficient to show us the development of this couple. And above all things, what the story of these chapters is all about is the story of the development of the faith of this couple. And they were going to do that. They were going to match each other stride for stride in the story of the development of their faith. And one or other of this couple are going to at times go ahead, and at other times they're going to fall back. You see, they both, remember, had strengths and weaknesses. And so what we see in these chapters is the story of a couple who struggled with their faith, and at times they triumphed, and at other times they miserably failed, but inevitably, ultimately, they both came to the final triumph of faith, and when they did, as we said before, they came to it together. And it didn't just happen all at once. They come into the record in the early stages of this story as a couple that really lacked faith. It's almost only at the end of the story that they finally have developed sufficient faith that the child of promise might be brought forth for them. It was the development of this marriage was something that took place in stages. It came through experience. They developed out of trial. And that's the story of marriage and the truth, isn't it? And not just of marriage, but of experience and the truth itself. Our characters are developed on the basis of experience and trial in life. You know, everyone has trial in life. And this couple had a trial. In fact, I suppose that most of us may look back upon our lives and see that there are certain particular things, especially, that have been a trial or a difficulty to us. Well, this couple were no exception. They had a special, special trial. You know what their trial was? Well, let's see what it was, simply by looking at the divine record. Here's the story of the particular trial that this couple endured. It was the trial of barrenness. Now just look at the story of the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 11, verse 30. But Sarai was barren. She had no children, says the record. You know, the Bible didn't need to say that second statement, did it? if a woman is barren, of course she's got no children. That's what it means to be barren. But what the record does, what the Spirit does in Genesis 11 verse 30 is it captures for us the sense of the distress that was felt in this woman. She was barren. She had no children, and that was going to be the trial they would struggle with this for years and years and years of their life. It was going to be a very distressing experience for them. And just as Sarah was distressed by that, so also was her husband, because in the 15th chapter, in verses 2 and 3, Abraham obviously felt the same thing. He says to God, "What wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless? Thou hast given me no seed," says Abraham. Oh, he felt that too. They really found this hard, this couple. This was the big problem for them. We're told in chapter 16 and verses 1 to 2. Sarai bare him no children. Yahweh, says Sarah, has restrained me from bearing. Go in unto my maid, that I may obtain children by her, says Genesis chapter 16 and verses 1 and 2. You see the thing that was on this couple's mind? Oh, they were really hurt by this. What about this one here, chapter 17, verse 7? Look at the reaction of Abraham to the promise that's given to him. He says there, "Shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old, says Abraham, as God makes that promise to him in the 17th chapter. He just couldn't believe it. Shall a child be born? You can almost see the tear, can't you, in Abraham's eyes, as he thinks about the wonder of that promise. Because that was the thing that this couple had struggled with for so long. Genesis chapter 18, verses 12 to 13. Remember these words of Sarah that she uttered in the tent? "After I'm waxed old, shall I have pleasure? Shall I of a surety bear a child which am old?" she cries in the 18th chapter, and verses 12 and 13. And what about chapter 21, verse 7? "Who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah should have given children such," she says, in the 21st chapter, "now that the little boy's been born, and there he is, just a little bundle in her arms, an old woman." And she clasps the bundle and says, "Who would have said that Sarah should have given children such?" That's the story of this couple, isn't it? They really struggled with this. This wasn't easy. And that trial haunted them for 25 years. You know that every incident in this story, in the book of Genesis, every time that this couple appear in the divine record, every episode that occurs has some bearing on the matter of this child. And if you think that there was a tension there because they were childless, well, any of us would feel that way, no doubt, within a marriage. But just see how that tension was heightened. Come back to chapter 12. And I'll show you something in the record that made it 10,000 times worse for this particular couple. It was bad enough to be childless. They felt that keenly. But imagine how this couple would feel it on the basis of these other statements in the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 12, verse 7. "And Yahweh appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land." Chapter 13, verse 15. "For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever." Genesis chapter 15, verse 5. "And he brought him forth abroad and said, look now toward heaven and tell the stars if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall thy seed be." Genesis 15 verse 18. "In the same day Yahweh made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land." Genesis chapter 17 verse 7. "And I will establish my covenant between me and thee and thy seed after thee in their generations for an everlasting covenant, to be a God unto thee and to thy seed after thee." And the promises had been made time and time and time again to thy seed, thy seed, thy seed. And she didn't have any seed. How would you feel? There was real pressure in this marriage. Because all the promises focused on the seed to come. But the seed wouldn't come. You know, that was such a severe trial that it could have done one of two things to this couple. It was either going to explode them apart, or it was going to fuse them together. It would all depend upon their attitude and their response. Could go either way, couldn't it? And God kept them childless. You can see the Spirit, look, children, childless, children, children, child, child, child. You can see what the problem was. And God kept them childless until the last vestiges of human hope had been wrung out of them, until it was not possible for any human solution to that problem. And only when they got to that point and beyond did God finally grant them the child that they had so desperately wanted for so long. Because out of the trial that they experienced, their characters had been built before God to the point where finally their faith triumphed. And you know what, brothers and sisters and young people? We don't all have the same trial as Abraham and Sarah. But we will all have trials. And if there are those here in this ecclesia who are married and yet are barren, I don't know. That doesn't necessarily mean that your problems or that your difficulties in life are related to the same things that this couple was striving for and struggling with. It may be for a different reason. But what we do believe is that Yahweh in his wisdom brings trial upon all of us for the development of our character, and it's different in each case. For one couple it is that they might be married, but they cannot bear offspring. For another couple it might be that they have children, no difficulties whatsoever, and yet their children have been afflicted with physical infirmities, with sickness, with ill health. And some families have had desperately worrying time with their children who've not been well in all sorts of ways. It's been a worry of mine for father and mother. And yet other families have no trouble bearing children. Their children are all well. They grow up without any sickness or problems whatsoever, and yet two of them drifted away from the truth in later teenage years. And they lost them altogether. And then there are those who have no trouble with their children. They're well, they're spiritually well. The children come into the truth, and yet all the life of that family they've struggled with financial worries, with job uncertainty, with bosses at work that have been unkind and tyrannical. They seem to have had financial problem after financial, they've never ever been able to find their feet financially. And for yet another person, it may be that they never will be married, even though they would like to be. I don't know what trial you might have, and you may not know what trials I will have. But what we do believe is that Yahweh, in his wisdom, knows what trials are good for us, for the development of our character according to our needs. We've got to believe that, as did this couple. And you know what the lesson of this couple is all about in this story? The lesson is that whatever troubles they had, they tried. They really tried. And because they tried, and tried so hard, they eventually did triumph, and their faith came to maturity. Remember the words of the book of Job? Remember those lovely words in the book of Job, that though their root had waxed old and the stock was dead in the ground, yet through the scent of water it budded. And what appeared to be the barren tree of this marriage eventually brought forth a son. And in spirit, Isaiah 11 came forth. And there came a rod out of the stem of Abraham, and a branch grew out of his roots, and the son that they'd yearned for so many years was born, and he was born in circumstances that left no doubt that God had worked finally in their lives. If you come back to Genesis chapter 21, it was clear, wasn't it? In Genesis 21, that when the boy finally did come, he only came because God had intervened. Genesis 21, verse 1. And Yahweh visited Sarah as he had said, and Yahweh did unto Sarah as he had spoken. For Sarah conceived and bare Abram a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken. It was all of God, wasn't it? And Abraham and Sarah, husband and wife, finally became, in this chapter, Abraham and Sarah, mum and dad. And that was a very special time for this couple. You know, I'd like you to come to the 1st of Peter, chapter 3. Remember these words in the 1st of Peter? They're quite well known, and it's on the subject of marriage. And the more we look at these words, the more convinced we become that the apostle is really drawing his thinking from the life experience of this particular couple. Just come and have a look at it. 1 Peter chapter 3. Now, remember these words that he speaks in the first 7 verses about the principles of marriage and of husbands and wives. The first thing he says, likewise ye wives, in the 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 1. Likewise ye wives. You know where the word likeness comes from, or not so much where does it come from, but what does it mean? I'd like to have a crack at that. What does the word likewise mean in the 1 Peter chapter 3 verse 1? Likewise. Likewise what? Yes? Similarly. Yes, that's the meaning of the word. So similarly to what? So you see, chapter 3 says, now similarly, ye wives, similar to what? Similar to whom? No. If I ever used the word in a context similarly, what would that tell us? If you ever used the word similarly in the middle of a statement, what would that tell us to do? Yes, compare. Compare with what? Pretty good. You can only compare with what's gone before. Now, what's gone before? Well, what's actually gone before from verse 21 of the 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 21 to 25, is the example of Christ, isn't it? You know that Christ did two things in those verses. Two things. He sacrificed himself for others. Verse 21, he suffered for us. You see that? He suffered for us. So one of the things that the Lord did was he sacrificed himself for others. And the other thing he did, verse 23, was he submitted himself to God. He committed himself, yielded himself, as the word means, surrendered himself to him that judges righteously. He sacrificed for others and he submitted to his God. So there were two principles at work in the life's experience of the Lord. Sacrifice and submission. Now in the 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 1, Peter says, likewise ye wives. And then you see what he says in verse 7, over the page. Likewise ye husbands. Ah, so you see the point now, that the 1 Peter chapter 3 is drawing forth now an application to both husbands and wives that comes from the example of the Lord in the previous chapter. Now, which belongs to who? Well, in the story of these principles, submission is that which he's going to enjoin upon wives. And sacrifice is that which he is going to enjoin upon husbands. But both those principles come from the example of the Lord. So likewise, ye wives. So the main thing that the apostle is going to draw out, and we're going to see this in our next study, the main thing that these first few verses of the 1st of Peter 3 are going to draw out for wives in particular is the principle of being in subjection, as he calls it. And the principle that husbands ought to espouse is to sacrifice for their wives. But he doesn't actually say that. What he says in the 7th verse is to give honour unto the wife. That's the way that Peter puts it. So the wife should be in subjection, likewise, that is, after the Spirit of Christ, who submitted to his Father, and the husband should sacrifice for their wives by giving honour to them in the same way that Christ suffered for us. Both the spirit of husband and wife towards each other is drawn from the example of the Lord. Now, I'll tell you where I think he got it from. Come back and have a look at Genesis chapter 17. This is where I think Peter got his idea from. I know he's talking about the example of Christ, but he's talking about more than the example of Christ. He's actually drawing his teaching on marriage from the story of Abraham and Sarah. Now just have a look at this. Twin principles for husbands and wives. In Genesis 17 and verse 17 we're told, "Then Abraham fell upon his face and laughed and said in his heart, shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old, and shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear?" Now there are two things that we need to notice out of that verse. The first thing is it says that what he did in his heart. You notice that? He fell upon his face and laughed and said in his heart. So this is how Abraham really felt. He didn't say this out to other people. He said this in his heart. This is how he really felt inside. It wasn't for the benefit of other people. This is an expression of this man's thinking inside. And you see what he says at the end of that phrase. "And shall Sarah, that is 90 years old, bear?" Now you know what's remarkable about that phrase, don't you? Well, can someone tell me? What is remarkable about that phrase? "And shall Sarah, that is 90 years old, bear?" What's so remarkable about that phrase, that little phrase? Yes? Now, I'll give you a clue. One word is in a different colour. He uses his wife's new name. Now look, we're not told how long they've been married for, but they've been married for quite a few years by now. They've been in the land for about 25 years. They were married before they left Ur of the... Let's say they've been married for 30 or 40 years. I don't know, you know, husbands that have been married for 30 or 40 years, you sort of get used to your wife's name, don't you? You know, you use it every day. Sarai, where's my socks? Now you imagine having called your wife by the same name, Sarai, for 30 or 40 years, every day. And in that chapter, her name is changed to Sarah. And quick as a flash, Abraham uses it straight away. "And shall Sarah bear?" he says. Just like that. That's giving honour to his wife, isn't it? He gave her the honour of that new name that God Almighty had given to him. He did it straight away, and he did it in his heart. This is how he really felt about this woman. He honoured her with that new name. You know, a person's name gets impregnated into our minds. A very hard sort of habit to change. Wasn't a problem to Abraham. He immediately gave honour to his wife by giving her that new name. "Shall Sarah bear a child?" he said. That's how he felt about her. Now come over the page to Genesis 18 and verse 12. "Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I'm waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also. I don't need to tell you which words ought to be underlined, do I? What words?
Well, it would have to be,
first of all, that she said within herself. That's exactly what her husband had done. She said within herself. And what did she say at the end of that phrase? She said, shall I of a surety bear a child, my Lord being old also? Now, there was no one around when Sarah said that. She didn't have to impress anybody. This is how she really felt within herself. And you know what she calls Abraham? My Lord. Isn't that what Peter says about being in subjection to the husband? So Peter says, you want to have a good marriage? You only got to do two things. It's really awfully simple. You want to have a really successful, happy, fruitful marriage in the truth. Only two things. Just two. Wives, be in subjection to your husbands. Husbands, give on to your wives. All you need to do, says Peter. That's where he gets it from. You know that those two statements from those two people, both said within their hearts about each other, happened within the space of a few weeks. Those two statements occur within, at the very most, just a few weeks apart. They loved each other, this couple. They loved each other. And she, this woman, on one occasion, berated her husband for strips of him. And he betrayed her in the house of Pharaoh. But this is how they really felt about each other, notwithstanding their weaknesses. I believe that's the very basis for Peter's comments upon ideal marriage principles. So you see, here we have a couple that began marriage as pagan idolaters. But by the time the record closes on their life, they are brought forth in the divine record as the ideal marriage according to scriptural principles. And they began as idolaters. And I think what that tells us, you see, is that the power of the truth is all sufficient to transform us, irrespective of our background. It doesn't matter where we've come from. It doesn't matter if we've been in the truth all our lives or whether we've come in from outside. The truth can change us. This couple were pagans when they started. They finish as the most outstanding marriage in the Bible, of whom the New Testament writers exhort us that we should emulate as the ideal prototype of successful marriage in the truth. Now, if the truth can do that to them, brothers and sisters, it can do it to us. And that is what this story is all about, is how the truth can change us if we will but be faithful to God and live according to his way. This is what we hope to look together and see out of this story in the book of Genesis concerning Abraham and Sarah, heirs together of the grace of life.